What is surprising about the biblical writer's use of this deliberately limited vocabulary is that it can be so precise and even nuanced. Our own cultural preconceptions of writers scrupulously devoted to finding exactly the right word are associated with figures like Flaubert and Joyce, who meticulously choose the terms of their narratives from a large repertory of finely discriminated lexical items. Biblical prose often exhibits an analogous precision within the severe limits of its primary vocabulary. There are, for example, two paired terms, masculine and feminine, in biblical Hebrew to designate young people, na'ar, na'ara, in this translation, lad and young woman, and yelid, yalda, in this translation, child and girl. The first pair is somewhat asymmetrical, because na'ar often also means servant, or anyone in a subaltern position, and sometimes means elite soldier, whereas na'ara usually refers to a nubile young woman, and only occasionally to a servant girl. Though there are rare biblical occurrences of yelid in the sense of young man, it generally designates someone younger than a na'ar. Etymologically, it means the one who is born, reflecting a development parallel to the French enfant. With this little to work with, it is remarkable how much the biblical writers accomplish in their deployment of the terms. In the first part of the story of the banishment of Hagar and Ishmael, Genesis chapter 21, Ishmael is referred to consistently as the child, as was his infant half-brother Isaac at the beginning of this chapter. The grief-stricken mother in the wilderness says to herself, "Let me not see when the child dies." From the moment God speaks in the story, verse 17, Ishmael is invariably referred to as the lad, evidently with an intimation of tenderness, but also with the suggestion that he is a young man, na'ar, who will go on to have a future. In the elaborately parallel episode in the next chapter that features Abraham and Isaac in the wilderness, Isaac is referred to by man and God as the lad, and the term is played off against the lads, who are Abraham's servants accompanying him on his journey, and not his flesh and blood. And Abraham said to his lads, "Sit you here with the donkey, and let me and the lad walk ahead." In the story of the rape of Dinah, Genesis chapter 34, she is first referred to as Leah's daughter, and not Jacob's daughter, for it is Leah's sons, Simeon and Levi, who will exact vengeance for her. The initial designation of daughter aligns her with both the daughters of the land, among whom she goes out to sea, and Shechem, Hamor's son. Son and daughter are cognates in Hebrew, who sees her, takes her, and rapes her. After the act of violation, Shechem is overcome with love for Dinah, and he implores his father, "Take me this girl, Yalda, as wife." Speaking to his father, then he identifies, tenderly, the victim of his own lust as a girl child. When he parleys with Dinah's brothers, asking permission to marry her, he says, "Give me the young woman, Na'ara, as wife." Now using the term for a nubile woman that is strictly appropriate to betrothal negotiations. After the brothers stipulate their surgical precondition for the betrothal, the narrator reports, "And the lad, Na'ar, lost no time in doing the thing, for he wanted Jacob's daughter." Suddenly, as the catastrophe of this gruesome tale becomes imminent, we learn that the sexually impulsive man is only a lad, probably an adolescent like Dinah, a discovery that is bound to complicate our task of moral judgment. And now Dinah is called Jacob's daughter, not Leah's, probably because that is how Shechem sees her, not realizing that the significant relationship is through her mother to her two full brothers, who are plotting a terrible retribution for her violation. It should be clear from all this that a